Welcome back to Young Turks. Michael Schur and Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. We are being produced today by J.R. Jackson and directed by Jesus Godoy. Talking about election reform, a couple of things just to get off the ledger here. The U.S. Patriot Act will be before our president with a low approval ratings desk shortly because it passed out of the Senate today, a vote for cloture. The Democrats had voted for sending that to the president, Joe Biden, Tom Carper, Hillary Clinton, Dianne Feinstein, Tim Johnson, Herb Kohl, Mary Landrieu, Ben and Bill Nelson, Mark Pryor, and Chuck Schumer. It's difficult to see these things go forward like that, and it appears that the president will, in fact, of course, sign that bill. It's an extension of the Patriot
Act. And let me throw in just a bit of breaking news here that I received a statement. Actually, this is the statement that John Conyers, will make tomorrow in the House in debating this bill. In the House, he says, this bill should not be on the suspension calendar, which is ordinarily reserved for non-controversial consensus legislation. This bill was written by a group of four senators with input only from the administration. There was no consultation with the conference committee, no consultation with the Senate, and certainly no consultation with the House. Needless to say, John Conyers, I think, is going to be against the bill tomorrow.
Well, I'd say John Conyers will be against the bill. It will be probably a long speech on the House floor, because John Conyers doesn't make a short speech, but he always seems to say the right thing.
Now, you're not going after my man John Conyers.
No, I would be the first to tell John Conyers that he is a spectacular representative. I would also be the first, actually not be
it's
the first
only a
to,
page and
to
half.
Call him long-winded.
It's only a page and a half.
A page and a half could take John Conyers all day.
All right, don't make me beat you up about John Conyers.
Don't beat me up. Listen, we've been talking about elections and the problems with voting machines. We've been going all over the country. We were speaking to people who are intimately involved, finding out what the problem is. Now let's solve said problem. And to do that, we invite onto the Young Turks, if we have our guest ready, I believe we do.
We do.
Lowell Finley, the co-director of voteraction.org. Lowell, thanks for being on the Young Turks.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
Hey, Lowell, this is Brad Friedman. Appreciate, by the way, all the work that you're doing. Now, you're an attorney, and it says here you've got over 20 years of experience in election law. You have been fighting the good fight, I know, out here in California, where the Diebold machines were decertified a couple of years ago. I think you were the attorney on that case, were you not?
Well, in late 2003, I filed a case under California's False Claims Act to show that Diebold had lied about its equipment when it tried to sell it to Alameda County here in the Bay Area in California. And that case was moving toward a head at the same time that the California Secretary of State was finding out more and more about Diebold's misdeeds here. So the two kind of dovetailed. And around the same time, the Secretary of State decertified Diebold because they had installed uncertified software on every single system they had in the state of California. And the Attorney General, who had intervened in the lawsuit I filed, settled that case with Diebold for $2.6 million and pages of injunctive relief that Diebold agreed to in terms of changing their practices here in the state.
And that is what I specifically want to talk to you about, because we've talked about all the problems that are going on with these systems around the country. We've done, as far as I'm concerned, our due diligence. I've been reporting on it for well over a year, and I'm pretty new to it over at bradblog.com. But, we find problems in these systems, not just Diebold, but Diebold, ESNS, Sequoia, all over the place. And at this time, the question is, well, what the hell do we do? And it seems to me that our only recourse is really in the courts. And you've taken some of these cases to the courts. I know you had success so far down there in New Mexico. I want to ask you about that in a second. But real quick to throw in here, the fella, Steve Heller, out here in Los Angeles, actually, who had exposed a bunch of documents from Diebold, where they acknowledged, from Diebold's attorneys, Jones Day out here, 2 years ago, and this tied into this, the whole decertification and everything else of Diebold out here. That guy who whistleblew on those documents is now, just last week, I believe, charged with 3 felony counts for doing that. Do you have any thoughts on that, Lowell?
Oh, I definitely have thoughts on that. I think it's a gross misuse of prosecutorial resources to go after a whistleblower like that when the Attorney General of the state was called upon a couple of years ago by the Secretary of State to bring criminal charges against Diebold and chose not to do it, even though they had lots and lots of evidence that Diebold had systematically lied both to governments that it was trying to sell millions of dollars worth of equipment to and to the Secretary of State when they were being asked about whether their systems had been qualified by federal testers and whether they had installed the same version of their software that had been tested in California, whether they were changing that before they installed it on voting systems that were actually used in elections here. So I think the priorities are all upside down there.
We see this all over the place now, going after the whistleblowers instead of after the actual criminals. Let's talk about New Mexico, because recently you were able to get a temporary restraining order down there, as I understand it, to keep them from being able to purchase any more Sequoia voting machines. Do I have that correct?
Well, what happened was we learned at the end of 2005 that the Secretary of State in New Mexico had given the counties there a choice between 2 systems, Sequoia's paperless touchscreen voting machine, the Edge, and what we think is a very good system, the AutoMark, which is a ballot marking device to help disabled people vote. But it helps them mark a regular paper ballot that then is counted through an optical scanner. And the big advantage of those systems is that the voter is marking a paper ballot, and that is hand recountable. So you can truly audit those elections and know what the voter's intent was without any ambiguity. We compiled all of the evidence for both why the Sequoia touchscreens were unreliable and showing that they didn't actually help the disabled as the federal Help America Vote Act required, and that was the whole excuse for the state looking at buying them.
Do we have a reason to believe that they're used? Those were actually used, those touchscreen Sequoia machines, in 2004, correct?
Oh, yes. They were used in 2004 and in 2002. And in 2002, the first time they were used in Bernalillo County, New Mexico, which is where Albuquerque and the majority of the state's population resides, that Sequoia Edge touchscreen voting system as a whole lost 13,000 votes. And this has been documented. It was found only by a campaign worker who looked very carefully at the reports. So the county elections officials didn't find it. He called it their attention, and they still didn't want to do anything about it. They were at a formal meeting ready to certify those results, and he got up and protested. And only then did they actually look into it. And Sequoia's representative there took the memory cartridge that was involved and flew out of state with it to Denver and came back and said, hey, we found the votes. So
unbelievable. Did what was the margin in 2004 for president of the United States in New Mexico?
It was just under 6,000 votes and under 1% of the total vote cast for president.
And what was it? And what was it in 2000?
It was in 2000, it was even less, if I recall.
Fewer than 1,000, I think, right?
It was very small.
And yet we have a case in 2002 where 13,000 votes just disappeared, and we discovered it only at the last second. So you guys have been able to, temporarily at least, stop the state of New Mexico from buying these crappy Sequoia touchscreen machines at all. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, what was fascinating about it was we didn't even have to go to court for the hearing to get the temporary restraining order. The state came to us soon after we filed our motion and many declarations from experts, and said, we'll stipulate, we will agree in writing that we will stop all movement toward buying those machines, and we'll stop indefinitely. So that remains on hold. They have agreed that they will not try to use federal HAVA money to buy those defective Sequoia touchscreens.
And I think that's what needs to be done at this point all around the country. What are the chances of being able to do something like that here in California, where the Secretary of State has just recertified these Diebold machines, which are, you know, proven, which his own report proves are hackable, in California, in Arizona, as we talked about a little bit earlier? What are the chances of being able to move forward with similar cases now around the country, and how can we help you, Lowell Finley, save democracy single-handed?
Well, Voter Action, which is the organization that I'm working on this issue through, is looking at the states that you mentioned. And that was always our plan, in fact, when we started the lawsuit at the beginning of 2005 in New Mexico, was to use that state as sort of a laboratory to develop evidence and some victories, and then move to other states where we could leverage what we had learned there and hopefully have an impact. And so we are actively looking with local activists in California at challenging the certification process and decisions that have been made on Diebold. There's actually a hearing tomorrow in Sacramento, the state capital, to certify the Sequoia touchscreen system, where there's a staff report that ends with a recommendation to certify, even though the report acknowledges all sorts of very serious problems with that system.
Thank you for mentioning. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, so in California, you know, Voter Action has been talking with a prominent law firm and with activists, and is seriously examining the possibilities of litigation here. And the same is the case in Arizona. The situation on the ground in each state is different. The state laws are different. But our view is that any place that is moving toward purchasing and installing and using more of these unreliable touchscreen machines that aren't verifiable and, most importantly, aren't auditable in any meaningful way, that if we have a way that we can help to stop that, we will try.
We're speaking with Lowell Finley from VoterAction.org, and I'm glad you mentioned Sacramento. Tomorrow, if you're in the Sacramento area, please show up. There's a protest and press conference beginning at 9 a.m. because Bruce McPherson is having hearings tomorrow on some of this stuff at 10 a.m., and, of course, he's having hearings on all of the voting machine companies except for Diebold for reasons that don't make a hell of a lot of sense. Let's take a quick call before we have to go to the break. Does that work, Mike?
Yeah, let's go to George in Connecticut. George, you're on the Young Turks. Thanks for holding.
Hi, guys. I just have a question about the recent Ohio court case where they were trying to run a case against a recount in Ohio. And
George, I'm afraid after all that we've lost you. It sounded like a bad cell line, but you wanted to talk about the Ohio court case, and maybe we can allow Lowell Finley to enlighten us a little bit about that.
My understanding is that the case that was dismissed there was the challenge to the recount that was held following the 2004 election in Ohio. And there are a lot of very serious questions about the legitimacy of that recount, that, you know, Ohio law requires that precincts and machines be selected at random for a partial recount, and then the recount be expanded if problems are found. And, in fact, voting machine vendors were allowed to open up and make changes in machines before the recount, and in many places the machines were not randomly selected. So those are just among many problems.
Right.
But the court dismissed that case, and I don't know where the legal team there stands.
Actually, I do. David Cobb, the Green Party presidential candidate, has said that they will be challenging that, appealing that, and trying to undismiss the case because it was dismissed on the ground that it was moot point, that the recount procedures had actually changed. It wouldn't be used again. It turns out the Secretary of State in Ohio recently announced that they would be using the exact same recount procedures in this 2006 election, so he's arguing it's not moot. We're going to take a quick break. We're speaking with Lowell Finley, and we'll come back, take some calls. Robert in Milwaukee, hang in there, my friend. We'll be back. You're listening to The Young Turks.
Welcome back to the unbelievably profane Young Turks.
Yeah, that ain't going out.
But we are profane and prophetic at the same time. Michael Shore, your political correspondent, going to school a little bit here with Brad Friedman and his posse of guests, educating us all about what is going on in the world of voter machines. We're joined as well by Lowell Finley from voteraction.org. Go to voteraction.org and you will learn more than you ever could have imagined learning about this issue. And we're joined also now by a caller. We're going to go to line two, Robert in Milwaukee. Calls and questions for the Young Turks and for Lowell Finley. How are you, Robert?
I'm doing okay. Good evening, fellas.
Hey.
Lowell, I guess I had two questions. I still got you?
Yeah, go ahead.
I was hearing some buzzing. I guess I had two questions, and I hope it's not something that you've already covered. The first of which is the obvious. What possible purpose is there for not having a paper trail on the machines? And the second one is that I've never seen any of the requirements that states are having for these devices other than, you know, they just have these devices and there may be three different evil empire companies producing them. I can think of about 15 different people off the top of my head that could produce a voting machine and hook it up to a laser jet that might work out.
Right.
Is that bidding information anywhere?
Well,
that's the two.
Robert, thanks for your call.
Yeah, in terms of printers, the companies did resist adding any kind of verifiable paper printer that might be audited to their touchscreen systems for a very long time, and then states started passing laws requiring them. Unfortunately, the printers that they came up with and that are now being sold in various states, here in California is one of them, really don't do the job. They print narrow little thermal paper rolls that are in a continuous roll that goes hundreds of feet, and it's very hard for something like that to be used for an audit. In fact, we don't think it can really be used realistically for an audit. And the whole value of having paper is, at the end of the day, to be able to bypass the electronic system of recording and tallying up the votes and make sure that you can go back to something that can't be hacked, a piece of paper,
right,
and confirm the count. That's why at Voter Action we favor true paper ballots that are then optically scanned. It's fine to use computers to rapidly scan them and count up votes on an unofficial level, but the paper ballots you can hand audit. Now, in terms of any of 15 people being able to design one of these systems, it is more difficult than it might seem, primarily because in the United States we have an important principle of privacy and secrecy of voting. And the difficulties that are introduced in designing a system where you have to not be able to identify a ballot with the particular voter, yet you want to be able to verify everything and be able to audit it, does make for some complications.
Right. It seems like there are complications all the way down the line. Let's talk about being more simplistic, and let's go north of the border into British Columbia. Blaine, how are you? Thanks for being on the Young Turks. Blaine, we have very little time, so we get to your question quickly.
Good afternoon, guys. I was just going to make a comment about paper balloting because we use a fairly unorthodox system up here in Canada. We just put an X on a piece of paper and drop it in the box, and it works just fine. That's a bit, your previous caller kind of stole my thunder on that
No, I don't think he did. I mean, you put it very simply, and it seems pretty obvious, and, of course, inherent in that are the people that are keeping tabs on the people that are keeping tabs on the votes, but I'll let Lowell Finley answer that very quickly for you.
Well, I wish that here in the United States we we could have that system. Unfortunately, since we don't have a parliamentary system of government where essentially you're just voting for one party and that then gets distributed out amongst representatives, we tend to vote on everything, including, you know, the dog catcher and the dog killer
true.
Here.
It would be a throwback. It would be a real throwback to the days where you voted on Tuesday and you waited until Thursday or Friday to hear the results. The results of this are that we have learned quite a bit from you, Lowell Finley. Sorry we have to abbreviate the time. Thank you for being with us. You are listening to The Young Turks. Welcome back to The Young Turks. Michael Schur, your political correspondent, and it seems regular host right now on The Young Turks, sitting in for Cenk Uygur, Ben Mankiewicz, and Jill Pike. Brad Friedman from BradBlog.com joins me. J.R. Jackson's your producer. Jesus Godoy is your director. We were just speaking with Lowell Finley at VoterAction.org. Go ahead and visit VoterAction.org. You'll learn quite a bit about what is going on in the world of vote counting in America, how it needs to be fixed, and how your dollars are required.
Oh, it's already
support
fixed.
And dollars. Well, that's a good point.
That's the problem.
Well done. And here's what else needs to be repaired. We are in a mess in Iraq right now. Iraq is, as we've said ad nauseum here and have been saying since before, it was a disaster, is in fact a disaster. It's over 400 people that have died since they bombed the Golden Mosque, which I think is last week, and Samarra last week. We've killed another nighttime blast has killed 25 people and wounded 43. Another 30 people were killed and 130 were wounded in a wave of strikes midday today in Iraq.
And actually, the numbers I'm seeing is 1,300 have died since last week. Apparently, the numbers given out by the Pentagon for some reason were lowballed. And the report has been corrected. RawStory.com has it right now. 1,300 killed last week.
And here's what's beautiful. This guy's a beauty. This John Negroponte, who I thought was actually, and I believe, is actually, if you think about the stable of people that the president was going to select from in order to be the NID, National Intelligence Director. That's John Negroponte. He came out and he said, listen. An Iraq civil war could spark violence throughout the region. What?
Huh? What?
We have sparked violence in the region. The Iraq civil war, there is violence already in the region. And the Iraq civil war would have, it would increase violence in Iraq. But, I mean, this is his quote. If chaos were to descend upon Iraq or the forces of democracy were to be defeated in that country, this would have implications for the rest of the Middle East region and, indeed, the world.
So now he's concerned about the effects of what happens in Iraq to the region.
Right.
Now, despite the fact that how many people told them so beforehand, despite the fact that, I think George W. Bush's own father warned them about the mess that they were going to be getting into.
Yeah, and certainly his people. I mean, if you listened to Brent Scowcroft, you would have found that.
Exactly. And everything they warned, by the way, has
come to pass. Yeah, of course it has, because they did not run the kind of war... certainly that his father ran, and that the allied nations that he was able to pull together were able to run. It is a disaster what's going on over there. It's getting worse, and you have people here saying that war would be a serious setback. This is John Negroponte, a serious setback to the global war on terrorism. I say it would not be a serious setback to the global war on terrorism because there wasn't terrorism in Iraq until we got there. And I think that is proven itself now that it has zero effect on terrorism because it didn't attack terrorists.
Would you have ever thought back in, where were we, 1992, that you would be longing for the days of George Bush Sr. as president and the sensible sort of policies? I was no fan of his policies back then. But we weren't, through the looking glass.
Right. Well, I always trusted George W. Bush in terms of his capability and his leadership and his wisdom and his intelligence. He was not someone who I agreed with most of the time even, but he was somebody certainly who was prepared to be president and prepared to be commander-in-chief, didn't come in with the kind of agenda that his son did. And this is a disaster. And we want to hear, of course, from our listeners, 866-997-4748, 866-99-SERIOUS. You can read also, and you can add to the fray at theyoungturks.com. Read Cenk's blog there today, because Cenk has a piece called We Got Him, in reference to George W. Bush's 34% approval rating. And listen, if you think that that civil war in Iraq is something that is surprising, you just weren't listening. You just weren't paying attention. And if this administration has the audacity to think that Americans are going to keep supporting this war effort as we see things really falling apart in Iraq, you've got another thing coming, because that's just not going to happen.
Yeah, and you know, the remarkable thing about this is, for those of us who have been saying this for years now, we've been called every name in the book by the Bush administration, saying that we don't support the troops. And then today, talked about it briefly earlier, this new Zogby poll says, a poll of the troops, I think it's the first of its kind, shows that 72% of U.S. troops in Iraq believe the United States should pull out within 1 year. Now, when Jack Murtha came out and said that, hell, when anyone came out and said that, This administration labeled these people as, you know, cut and runners, as cowards. Here we've got the troops themselves, 72%, and let me add to it, if I could, a piece that Paul Rykoff, who's a great hero, left his job after 9/11 on Wall Street to go fight this stupid thing. He says, for our troops, this isn't about Republican or Democrat. This is from Huffington Post. It's about results. And right now, they're just not seeing the advantages of an open-ended commitment. Our troops have had more than enough yellow ribbon bumper stickers and patronizing photo ops. What they need now is a realistic plan to replace the stubborn rhetoric that has characterized the Bush administration's approach to Iraq. If people really want to support the troops, they should start listening to them. He's been saying this now for at least 2 years since he got back from fighting out there. And listen to the troops. They say it's time to get the hell out of there.
You know, and there's also this sort of assumption that Republicans make, that they are listening to the troops, that for some reason they feel the troops are automatically behind them. And that's not the case.
Truth well, they feel that God is behind them.
Well,
as
they
well.
Do feel that. So, well, God, you know, God. In fact, it's proving. It's starting to prove that. Yeah, maybe God is behind them. But
there's apparently no proof that God is behind the Republicans. There's no proof that the troops are behind them either, to be frank.
No, and the troops weren't. I mean, if you looked at internal polling, the polling that we were getting during the election, actually,
right.
Everyone would say, oh, well, the troops are 84% in favor of the president. You know, those kind of polls were taken from among the officers. They were not taken from among the people that were serving, the rank and file. And the rank and file right now have had it with what's going on.
They have. Zogby poll, only 23% backed Bush's position that they should stay as long as necessary. That's
right.
Bush's position. 72% want to be pulled out within a year. Of those, 29% said they should withdraw immediately.
Yeah. It's time for, you know, it's time for this administration to listen to some Americans, not just themselves. And they live in this vacuum. And listen, the time was a long time ago. I'm not making news here by saying now is the time. But it's time for the Americans who are not being heard to start protesting and start making their voices heard. It's 2006. It's an election year. You have to start paying attention to what's going on in U.S. politics right now. The Patriot Act is going to be on the president's desk in the morning. He's going to be able to approve it, 69-30. It passed cloture in the U.S. Senate. And you have the president here saying that he thinks Osama bin Laden helped him win. When he was talking with an interviewer in Washington, Bill Salmon, who wrote a book called Strategery. Bill Salmon of the Washington Times. We've had him on the show before. He is a sympathizer to this president. The quote was, I thought it was going to help. I thought it would help remind people that if bin Laden doesn't want Bush to be the president, something must be right with Bush. So he's campaigning in the bin Laden camp as well.
Want to take a call?
Let's take a call. The lines are open, 866-997-4748, 866-99-SIRIUS. We go to Frank in Arizona. Frank, how are you?
I'm doing great, guys. Hey, I have something real quick but real important, because everything we talk about on this show and every other show is completely pointless unless we can't trust those voting machines, as we were talking about before. You know, no matter what we do, Dave, no matter how hard we work, and how much truth is uncovered, it's pointless if the machines are being manipulated.
Right. And now, it's pointless if you call me Dave, by the way, but that's fine.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay, don't worry.
anyway, in Mojave County, Arizona, we're the fastest-growing county, one of the fastest-growing counties in the entire nation. It is a red county. It is the largest county by square miles in the United States, so there's some logistical problems here. They've just installed some new equipment last year, and the equipment is real simple equipment. They set up these little booths. You fill out an 8.5 by 11 card. It's like a cardstock type paper. It's white with black print. You darken the box next to the candidate's name. Then after you're finished filling out the card, and by the way, the card is barcoded with your voter registration ID. Each card is assigned to each specific voter. If your card's not there, you're not going to vote, number one. Number two, you fill out the card, and you insert it in this machine that looks exactly like a shredder. It has a little slit in the top and a little LED printout. I think it just counts how many cards have been put into it.
Right.
I assume that that's a scanner. I went down to the elections office here in Arizona, in Mojave County. I spoke to Alan, the elections officer here, and he assured me of a couple of things.
Was his name Alan, though?
Yes, his name is Alan. Yes. Yes, it is. And he said that the system that we have here in Mojave County is completely foolproof, error-proof, and that it cannot be tampered with because there is a paper trail.
What could possibly go wrong? Let me ask you this, Frank. Do you know what the brand name is on that machine down there?
You know what? There was no brand name on that machine. It looked like, picture any shredder and take the brand name off of it, just a white, like a cream-colored machine with one little LED screen on the top and a slit.
All right, you should be able to figure out what type that is, and you know, feel free to let me know. You can follow up. I can be emailed after the show, brad@bradblog.com.
Okay.
But the important thing is to stay on top of these guys. There is no foolproof machine, and it's interesting that it's barcoded, as you say, because that means the privacy of your vote would seem to be out the window. But you've got a problem in Arizona. All over the place, Maricopa County, if you're not paying attention to what's going on out there, it's unbelievable, and that's a Republican fight, Republican primaries.
Mm-hmm.
But your Secretary of State, Jan Brewer, recently called election reform advocates who showed up at her reelection announcement, she called them anarchists and conspiracy theorists, because they wanted to know what was going on. Now, her own, if you heard in the last hour, we had Brad Nelson from Pima County, how he behaved. He's the election director. I think he's the anarchist, not
right.
The folks out there fighting. You need to keep up the fight. You can let me know more information, and I'll try to help you with what kind of machine that is. But find out. Educate yourself. You must make noise. The media is not going to do it. The Republican and Democratic parties both are not going to do it. It is up to you, Frank, to make noise about this and get something done. And I have seen it all around the country. Folks like you do make a difference when you go in there and make noise and make sure your ballot gets counted.
Now, when I addressed this with Alan down there at the county office, again, because I'm going to go back in there next week, and I point out to him that I'm a little concerned about the accuracy and the fact that, you know, these machines are electronic, and anything electronic can be tampered with. I would like to have his proof sources. In other words, I'm going to ask him to show me what he's looked at when he went ahead and acquired these machines and what was in the decision-making process that convinced him that they were tampered
with. Good. The burden is on him to show that your vote is being counted, and if they're optical scan, if they're with Diebold optical scan machines, and he tells you it's foolproof because they have a paper trail, nonsense. Get the archives from that discussion with Ion Sancho.
Now, are you telling me that a barcode on my ballot, on my specific ballot, means that my privacy is being invaded in order for other, let's say, other administrators at the county to see who I've been voting for?
Sure sounds like it. If you have a specific ballot that belongs to you that is numbered that they can go back and see how you voted, sounds like your right to a private ballot has just been thrown away. Now, I don't know if that's exactly what's going on out there, but that was the first thing I thought of when you said that, you know, we have a ballot specifically for me with my...
It sounds like exactly what happened when they first gave blacks in America the vote, that they were always trying to say, well, you know, convince the black voters who were not exposed to all of the what was going on in fixing the vote in the South, telling them that if they voted a certain way, you know, people would find out, so you better vote this way. It sounds like almost a scare tactic. But on the other hand, if it is just a barcoded card that you stick in and there is a trail that you can have, I mean, at a certain point we have to figure out whether or not that information is proprietary and whether or not that information is actually helping to create a history so that you can go back and do a proper recount in cases where you'd need that. Anyway, I thank you for the call, Jim. That was Frank in Arizona. Thank you for participating in the show. Tomorrow in front of the Supreme Court, today, and it'll be disappointing for the Supreme Court justices tomorrow because they had Anna Nicole Smith before them today arguing that she needed more money, and, you know, God bless her, probably she does. But apparently the judges were very sympathetic to Anna Nicole, saying, asking all kinds of questions and made it seem as if she had a case. Tomorrow, in what I would describe as a much more important, if less enticing, case, the High Court will look at GOP redistricting in Texas. You'll remember that the redistricting that occurred in Texas at the hands of Tom DeLay's political machine there really changed, completely changed the way the Congress was run. It tightened the grip that the GOP had on the Congress, and it made Tom DeLay very, very powerful, and of course it led probably to his ultimate demise because of the backlash.
And let me add that 8 out of 8 of the attorneys who looked at this at the Department of Justice, because this came under the Voting Rights Act, they all recommended against it, and George Bush's political appointee down there, who now heads the Federal Election Commission, he said, I don't care that 8 out of 8 of you disagree with it. We're going to put it through anyway, and put it through they did. And so hopefully it gets...
tomorrow changed. It gets argued. It'll be the first time that a redistricting case and a voting rights case is before John Roberts, before Sam Alito, and most importantly, Judge Anthony Kennedy tomorrow, Justice Anthony Kennedy, an associate justice of the Supreme Court. He voted... He was the swing vote, actually. I guess anybody could claim they were the swing vote, but it was a 5-4 decision in 2004 upholding Republican redistricting in Pennsylvania. But he did say that some future claim against gerrymandering might have some merit. The assumption is that Justice Kennedy sees something in this case that he finds troubling, Charles. I'm not sure who's saying this. It's on MSNBC. I think it's a law professor, Guy Charles, saying that there's something that Anthony Kennedy may see that might have merit going forward. So this is a case to watch. Boy, it would sure be nice to see this undone as well. And I think that Tom DeLay's comeuppance is coming from all parts of the country. We invite your calls, 866-997-4748, 866-99-SIRIUS. We'll be back after the break, finish up the show, and take your calls. You're listening to the Young Turks.